time is 1:35, and the date being April 25th, 1983. The place is room 124, the judiciary hearing room, located within the Capitol at Buell, Alaska. Present for the hearing today are all members of the committee, with the exception of Representative Malone. Items that issued as published in the calendar today include HB 60, an act providing for conditional pardon, HB 293, an act relating to the definition of term agency in the Veterans Act, HB 117, an act relating to sexual abuse of a minor, HJR 8, an amendment to the Constitution relating to elections of candidates for governor and lieutenant governor, HB 6, an act relating to driving a motor vehicle, and HB 49, an act relating to nepotism of state employment, but providing for an effective date. The HB 60 the administration has still not gotten fiscal information here. The list of requests for fiscal information regarding this piece of legislation is growing. It just goes on and on and on. We continue to request it, and we don't get any. We were promised that it would be here by today's hearing, so we wouldn't have to continue this matter. It's still not here. Patrick Conheady from the Department of Law is here, and we can take a statement in the matter if you have a statement regarding it. The committee can take no action on the bill as we don't have fiscal information. Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While he's coming to the table, I would suggest to you that if a fiscal note is not forthcoming, that you write your own. You can do that and not wait on the department.
Yeah, this is the second time that we've scheduled it in the interest of fairness, which we've been indicated lately that we're not too fair. We want to be perfectly fair. And if we just don't have it, we can take your statement on the matter, but that's all we can do today. Since we are recording electronically, I need you to state your name for the record prior to making your statement on the subject, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Patrick Conheady, and I represent the Department of Law. Actually, I work for the Department of Law, and I represent the Parole Board. The part about the fiscal information, I have no idea, and I apologize on behalf of the administration for being tardy in that regard, and I'll look into it after this hearing. I just have a very brief statement, and that is regarding the constitutionality of the bill itself. I've done some research, as is my job to do, on this whole situation, and it appears that this bill is probably unconstitutional. I would just refer you to a U.S. Supreme Court case, Schick versus Reed, 419 U.S. 256, a 1974 case, and 419 U.S. 256. And they say that conditional pardons are okay, provided the conditions themselves do not in themselves offend the Constitution. Taking that one step further, if you refer to Edwards v. California, 314 U.S. 160, about the right to travel interstate, I think that in all probability this legislation would be unconstitutional. And that's the gist of my statement, Mr. Chairman.
In the interest of moving the bill forward to the committee again, as we requested, we had some questions, and we did ask the Department of Law to put that opinion in writing, and they haven't gotten
it. I have not heard that. I'm sorry.
Well, I did that personally myself.
Okay,
it's not been forthcoming, and this may be one way to break the law again.
That's fine. I will have it to you before the end of the day.
Representative Foxon?
Before he leaves, I have in my file this typed legal analysis or analysis of the constitutional questions, which I haven't read yet, but who prepared that?
That's the counsel for the committee did.
Okay, that's not.
No.
I have not seen that. Okay.
So if you would bring your opinion and see what you could do about the rest of it, I'll try to take the...
Let me ask, I'm sorry, but I'm just skimming this. I haven't read it carefully, but apparently there is an argument here, Mr. Conheady, that the constitutional provision on executive clemency can be read to allow the legislature to set out procedures relative to executive clemency, and apparently
that
could be argued as an implementation of that provision of the Constitution.
That argument would only apply to whether or not such a provision in law was violative of the separation of powers. I would agree with that analysis that the legislature probably can write standards into granting of clemency, provided it isn't an elimination of the clemency ability on the part of the executive branch. Mm-hmm. It does not go to the immediate question of conditional pardons or conditional clemency, wherein your condition is in and of itself a constitutional violation.
A federal constitutional violation.
A federal violation. So right, yes.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Sir, wouldn't this, something which if a legislation of this type, would this be hinging, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything, but on state rights, where the governor wouldn't have the authority to forbid somebody to come back into the state. Is that the basis of the unconstitutionality?
It's the basis of the unconstitutionality would be the right to travel provisions in the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. That's that Edwards case of, back in the 40s or 50s, when that originally came about, which, you know, California tried to prevent people from, indigents from coming into their state. And they said, the Supreme Court said, sorry, but because people are citizens of all the United States, they have the right to travel throughout all the United States. This provision would appear probably to run afoul of that.
Yeah, the right to travel, and it
yes.
makes it unconstitutional.
That's correct.
Thank you for coming down and sharing briefly with us as you try to get those
I will get that to you
as
today.
As soon as you get them, we will continue this matter until such time as the committees and receive that information and hear on the schedule or note on the subject for the day.
Thank you
again.
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of that. You didn't set it for a specific date.
I can't count on them to get it down on a specific date, so I just can't. The absence of ability to rely on them, I can't do it. HB 49, which is an act relating to nepotism in state employment, is providing for the effective date. If you remember when the committee finished on this some time ago, again, the Department of Law, through Joe Savini, said he would get a statement down regarding several questions the committee had raised. And that statement did arrive here just a few minutes before noon, in fact, right about noon. And it's in your folder for consideration because it is entailed and detailed. The committee has got a couple other questions we'd like to ask as a result of the letter now. So it becomes another item that we will have to continue partially as a result of the letter. And I need to I guess chat with somebody in the Department of Law, as this is a piece of rules legislation, and see what they intend to do with this, whether they intend for the committee to make something out of it or discard it. So with that...
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if I just...
Foxy?
For my review, have you identified certain problems based on the letter, or what would the inquiries be once we get to them?
If you go through the letter, they end up saying that if you try to do the things it appears to me that they want to do in the letter, in the bill, it all boils down to the last few sentences in the letter where it says if you try to do that, it's going to put the bill in serious jeopardy constitutionally.
Oh, that goes to the question of living
so,
together, relationships, right.
So if that's their opinion, it's their bill.
Yeah, I think this doesn't. The bill as drafted doesn't affect those relationships, right?
That's right.
Interesting.
So I think we need to question that a little bit. And because normally this would arrive in time enough for me to ask those questions, but guy, you're just so late.
Yeah.
That
I should just let you know, Mr. Chairman, I am, based on the letter, and it basically confirms our discussion in the meeting with regard to some other gaps in the legislation, I'm going to have some question about nepotism across department lines, nepotism that relates to someone below the level of a director, and the idea that it's point of time nepotism, which means that you could appoint someone to a position that doesn't violate this and then immediately promote them into a position that does, but you do an end run around the legislation. I think there are gaps in the legislation that I hope to look at.
When you read the letter, that flies right out. The other part that flies out to me when I read the letter is that is that there are other sets of rules within the rules that may or may not allow for nepotism in certain cases. within the government, i.e. the legislature has a set of rules, different different appointed systems in the government have sets of rules, and now we're trying to modify a third set of rules that may not exist. So.
And in fact, in that context, we have a ethics bill floating around. I think it's now in this committee,
right,
which has a nepotism provision.
I was going to say that, too. We've got two more pieces of legislation that came across the House today that deal, in part, again with this. So I think in the interest of that, we don't have any trouble. We've got a hold of this.
I've just noticed on this particular bill, that my notes just say Bustle and Fox in total agreement.
Well, I kind of an error when you look at it. We do have two people here, Terry Kramer and Mike McCullen, and in the light of those remarks, do either of you care to make a statement on AC 49 at this time?
Mr. Chairman, just one clarifying statement. The bill is sponsored by the Blue Ribbon Commission on the State Personnel Act, which is not part of the executive branch, it's the legislative commission.
Okay, I mean, we just got this letter. Do you know about this letter? Have you seen
it? I got it shortly before lunch, yes.
Okay, so it's rather quick for anybody to react to. I think we need to talk about it before we discuss it.
Did you get a copy? Maybe we ought to give him a copy so he can.
I have.
Okay, that's great.
Can you carry that? Well, is it in front of these today? I wonder if we should put that in 293.
We could get through these, we could get some sun.
HJR 8, just a short statement on its what we've done with it. You know, we discussed, we picked the folders up because we talked about the different methods we were going to do it, and we're now delving into a way of doing it all within statutes. I think until we get that worked out, Dick Bradley is trying to pull together the stuff, and he just didn't have it together in time. So I think it's probably going to result in another piece of legislation to treat that issue. That's the way it appears to us at this time.
I'm sorry, this is the one about the
That's
runoff
election.
Election
of governor, lieutenant governor. Mary Lou Miner was down here before committee, and just 5 minutes before we started, brought down a bunch of information that we had requested from the Division of Elections to help us put that together. Once again, we're just running out of time. Right now, it's my feeling that that'll probably result in a new piece of legislation instead of trying to treat it with a constitutional amendment. But at any rate, when we get it together, we'll offer both the committees to see which way we want to go. That takes HJR 8. And we want to treat House Bill 293, which is an act related to definitely determined the agency of the Ombudsman's Act. Gary Ward is not here. Is there a violation of the David Dragon for the
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ward.
Representative Ward had a death in his family, and so he may have had to. I know I excused him, and I'm not sure whether it began today or not, but if not, it begins this evening and goes through most of this week. It's the wife of the father that died just a couple months ago.
This makes it difficult when someone from the Ombudsman's Office and Bar Association didn't get here when they told us they're coming. It's one of the problems we have when we try to get people here. The legislation, however, is straightforward. We're simply amending it to read that it includes the Alaska Bar Association. I can't speak for the people from the Ombudsman's Office or the Bar Association. I can't conceive of there being any problem. Is it going to work?
No, I have got some to the board that this will go down.
Much as I dislike doing this in the absence of anybody from the sponsor to be here, and we will try once again to get somebody from the Bar Association to come. If they don't come when they tell us the second time, and if we get somebody from the sponsor here, the committee will go ahead and proceed with the bill. We can't just stop action because of not posing any interest in the family problems that no one has control of, and they're arisen with representing the ward. Again, much as I hate to do it, we will. Representative Ward, do you know how long that's going to take? Do you know what?
I believe that I excused him from Tuesday through Thursday.
Yeah, that was on Wednesday.
Well, maybe we'll pick a day here and let's continue this matter until Thursday. Let's actually set a day. Thursday, the 28th. At that time, we ought to be able to have Representative Ward back or somebody from his staff, and we'll set on the Budget Office of the Department of Law and let them know. Representative Proctor?
You are going to contact the Department of Law and the
Well, we have done so, and they were supposed to be here.
The Department of Law didn't want to take a stand on the Department of Law. Either the Criminal Division or the Civil Division did not want to take a stand. They shut that to the Bar Association and moved out of the Department of Law.
Mr. Chairman?
One
question that hopefully maybe the ombudsman or staff or somebody would address is on page 2 of Mr. Chenoweth's letter, the second to the last full paragraph, says the question which should be considered is whether there are any existing remedies by which alleged errors or misconduct by the bar might be systematically reviewed. For the members of the committee, it might be helpful for either Mr. Chenoweth or staff or somebody to review what other alternatives there are to that, to just adding them to the ombudsman statute.
Jose Barnes?
Chairman, I just briefly looked through that. If memory serves me correctly, there's not any, because the Alaska Bar is the control of its own members, and I know we tried to sunset it a few years back. Maybe we could do that again. I just thought I'd throw that in for the benefit of Representative Clausen.
Well, I think they are an entity unto themselves. They make their own rules and hold themselves out beyond and above the law, and I think that's just the way it is here in this state. Representative Clausen.
Let me first say that I'm going to try to take as little involved in this as little as possible because of my obvious appearance of some sort of conflict, since I'm a member of the Washington Bar Association, both this state and another state. But with regard to your specific question, there is, of course, a specific procedure set out for investigation and penalization of lawyers. In fact, through the bar, and in fact, that's been sort of reorganized and beefed up, and some effort in that we have.
The next item of business or an issue is House Bill 117, Committee Substitute for House Bill 117. It's an act revising the law regarding sexual assault and sexual abuse of a minor. As you know, we've had some hearing on this matter. It then went to the Department of Law had significant input on what was to be drawn. The sponsor himself then had some additional input on what was to be drawn. The bill got simple, the bill got complicated. Regardless of which draft we look at, the bill got changed somewhat. Representative of the sponsor, Representative Testinger, is here. And at this time, if we take a seat at the end of the table, and I know since we are recording electronically, you need to state your name for the record prior to the statement. But please, because we have three pieces of legislation in front of us, one marked Lear, one marked Law Draft, and the other one is the House Bill. If you've got statements on one or the other, try to differentiate for us.
Okay, my name is Ed Essa, and I'm an agent representative of Pestinger. And the bill we're discussing is CS for House Bill number 117, Judiciary. And what that does, it treats a certain area of sexual abuse of a minor, child abuse.
Excuse me, before, I need that clarification.
One's marked Lear, one's marked Department of Law. Yeah.
Which judiciary?
I think it's the Lear, the single sheet.
Okay. Now, we deal on two areas. One is if you're 16 or older and you have sexual contact with someone under 13. And we're raising that from a Class C felony to a Class B felony. The second thing we're doing is, if you have penetration with someone 13, 14, or 15, and 4 years younger than the offender, we're raising that from a Class C to a Class B. This pretty much, that's what our bill does, what we're proposing. The Department of Law wants to take an omnibus package and revise the entire statutes. And we feel that even though some of their ideas are very good, we don't think that they're practical at this time. If we incorporate those now, we think we may end up achieving nothing. Because of fiscal notes, because of the making the bill more cumbersome, because of the discussion that would be involved, we feel that a more simple approach right now is in order. And if we took ours, the Judiciary Committee substitute, and dealt with that one, perhaps in January, we could review the recommendations by the Department of Law and incorporate that in a bill, a separate bill from this one.
See the differences?
The Department of Law's bill deals, first of all, with assault in the second degree, sexual assault. And it says if you have contact with someone without consent, that's going to be sexual assault in the second degree. The other one is with someone mentally disordered. Well, that isn't necessarily dealing with abuse of a minor, at least not exclusively with abuse of a minor. And even though it would be, we would not be adverse to introducing that legislation next year, we feel that doing it at this time on this bill will not allow for this bill to get through committee hearings and get passed. And we may end up with such a large bill that nothing gets accomplished, rather than focusing on a couple areas, getting that squared away, and then next year, or at the beginning of next session, going on with what other recommendations you have.
Are there questions of committee members of Mr. Essa? Representative Foxon?
Why is the bill necessary? Let's go at it from that direction. What is the problem that caused the filing of the bill in the first place?
I think the increase in sexual abuse.
Sexual abuse of a minor, or
yes,
just sexual abuse?
Sexual abuse of a minor.
What are the types of cases that we're finding problems with regard to sexual abuse of a minor?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what kind. I know that we've read a lot of reports that said that it's something that's increasing, and youth services are concerned about it.
Well, are we talking about mostly incest, or are we talking about... I guess the proposed committee substitute you're talking about doesn't change all of the laws, as I understand it, with regard to sexual abuse of a minor. I'm trying to figure out why these specific things are being done.
These are the areas that Sam felt were of the greatest concern at this time, and therefore these are the ones he addressed. Now, by addressing that, he's not saying that all the rest is fine and he would be touched. He's saying that as far as his priorities go, he thinks that if we address this now, we're heading in the right direction, and then perhaps next year we can review it and find out what other amendments need to be made and do it then.
Virginia Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's unfortunate that Representative Pestinger is not here because he is an attorney, and on behalf of Mr. Essex, he isn't, so it's difficult, I'm sure, for him to speak on the areas of questions that have been raised by Representative Foxon. And with that in mind, is someone from the Department of Law here to testify? Because before you leave Evan. I would like to say to you that I just briefly glanced over the Department of Law's draft, and I really don't see how it would be any more difficult to get the one portion of the bill through than the total package.
Mr. Chairman, under abuse in the first degree, under the Department of Law's bill, what it would do is, if a person has penetration with someone under 13, a person over 16 has penetration with someone under 13, it would change that from an unclassified to a Class A felon. Now, last year, the penalty was increased to an unclassified felon. However, now what I'm saying is, now the reason they want it lowered is the argument that if you're under 13, then you're giving consent. It's not as violent a crime as if someone forces it on someone. Now the argument opposing that is, are you old enough to give consent if you're under 13? That's the first part of this two-part change. The second part is, if you're 18 or older and you have penetration with someone under 18 who is entrusted into your care. Now, you may agree with the second one and say, yeah, let's lower that to a Class A from non-classified. If you don't agree with the first one, it's almost academic, because the Department of Law has advised me that if you lower one, you may have to lower the other.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Essex, I would like very much to thank you for those comments, because as I said, I simply just looked through their bill. And now that you've told me what they intend to try to do with this piece of legislation, having worked as hard as I did last year to get rape classified into the case of an unclassified felony, I'm just really appalled. So I will now take this piece of legislation that brought down here and go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Thank you.
Are there further questions?
Well, I have several questions just to see how this works. We've got age differences here and stuff. Would it be appropriate to ask
perhaps Gail would be better?
Gail, or either way, I'm just going to ask Gail if she understands it. But you're going to stay here.
Sure. You're not going to leave, are you?
No.
All right, if there are no further questions, Mr. Essay, at this time, we have Gail Oretzky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gail, since we are recording electronically, I need you to state your name for the record prior to making the statement on the subject.
Thank you. I'd be glad to. My name is Gail Horetsky, and I'm from the Department of Law, Criminal Division, and I'm here to address you on what is in the right-hand corner called draft law of CS for House Bill 117 Petitioner. I know you have several versions. I'd like to take a minute to explain some of the background that went into this bill so that when you deal with the three or four different versions, how many you have, you understand. Originally, of course, Representative Pessinger put in the original version of HB 117. What that did was take the current sexual abuse of a minor, what's currently in the law, divide it into two parts, and move one of them up into be a B felony and left one of them as a C felony. Department of Law has no quarrel with that. We think it's a move in the right direction. My comment has always been on that bill, whatever committee I've testified in front of, whether it was House or Senate, that it didn't go far enough, it didn't accomplish enough. And by what I mean, so I've been a prosecutor in this area for 4 years, specifically child sexual abuse for a year and a half in Anchorage. I've done a whole lot of these cases, and I've ended up putting a whole bunch of fathers and child molesters' acquaintances in jail. And I think in most cases that's where they deserve to be. And my primary function has always been the good of the victim. And that's one of the principal considerations that any prosecution person has to keep in mind, is the effect of whatever action on the victim. There are some holes in our current law right now. There are people who cannot be prosecuted for anything, or if they can be prosecuted at all, the most they can be prosecuted on is a misdemeanor, or an A misdemeanor, or a B misdemeanor. B misdemeanors carrying 90 days max, some of them carrying only up to 10 days, and speaking of harassment. For example, right now, if a father approaches his 17-year-old daughter and fondles her breast, perhaps as a prelude to a more serious sexual assault, that is no offense under the code other than harassment, which carries a maximum of 10 days in jail. There's no other crime that I can charge that man with, and that's a travesty. There are situations that we run into quite often where you have youngsters, 16 or under, who are committing sexual assaults, some of them very serious sexual assaults upon younger children. Often this arises in a babysitter, toddler situation. Sometimes it's just pure forcible rape by, say, a 16-year-old on a 13 or 14-year-old. And since our current laws exclude, by their very definition, anybody under 16, they all, the sexual assault laws start out, person who's 16 years of age or older, comma, does X, Y, or Z. There are holes in our law regarding juvenile offenders where a young man would commit perhaps a forcible rape on a young child and there not be a crime which the juvenile authorities can prosecute him under. Now, I'm not saying that those situations don't go addressed. I know that the juvenile authorities right now try to work something out with the family, get the youngster to agree to spend a certain amount of time in an institution if that's needed. But as a handle over somebody, that you can say, okay, you'll be prosecuted for X crime if you don't cooperate, if you don't go to treatment, if you don't move to a different home situation. We don't have that right now, and it is a big problem because many of the studies that you read indicate that persons who grow up to be forcible rapists began to act out that behavior when quite young. If we could get a hold of young people who are committing these kind of crimes and try to do something with them right then, I think we might, just might, end up with fewer rapists as an adult, and I certainly think it's worth a try. With that background as to our position, I was asked by the House Hess Committee to make some suggestions for additions to Mr. Kessinger's bill. That I gladly did, and I provided him with a couple of different versions of bills. I went to some of the meetings in that committee. They must have had four, maybe more, and they were unable to agree on any different version. There were several different versions. In fact, it's my understanding that the Hess Committee substitute didn't pass, at least not in this form, that ultimately they passed out the sponsor's original bill. And I was there when Mr. Esso went there and asked that they pass out that bill and allow House Judiciary to work on what exact version went to the floor, because in effect that committee couldn't reach an agreement on it, and it was felt that it was important to move it along and allow maybe some fresh input from other legislators on it. So that's what happened, is the original version was passed out and sent to this committee with the specific belief, I believe, it was my impression sitting through those meetings, that this committee would have the time and resources to put some attention to the area.
Just a point of clarification, yes. The committee report does refer, it does indicate that the committee substitute did pass from the committee. It is titled that way, it's on the committee report, and it has a due pass for M.M. Miller, Jenny Cato, and Milo Fritz, and it has a due pass with, when amended by Milo Copeman, Peter Gall, and can't read the other meetings. And they're all due pass.
Did they have another meeting after the one year?
We went to Hess.
So I'm just reading from the committee report. It's kind of immaterial at this point, but that's what it reads. We had in your bill back at the original bill. The Hess Committee substitute. And now you have the two
Judiciary
Committee substitutes, one Mark Lear and one Mark Parkin Law. That's the history I have before me.
It's part of our, that's what's confusing. Just for the committee's benefit, if in fact that was passed, which I'm sure Mr. Chairman is correct, that is appears to be two or three sections lifted from basically the Department of Law's bill. So just to let you know that if that's what passed, it's a portion of what was provided to them at that point. Be that as it may, I agree, Mr. Chairman, that it doesn't really matter right now. I hope you've had a chance to look through the Department of Law's proposal, and I want to make it real clear that these were areas where we saw problems in the current law. If there are additional problems, like I know Representative Liskell was talking to me about a pornography statute, and if there are some portions of this that are not acceptable, certainly the whole thing is not welded together. What we tried to do is alert this committee to the changes we thought could be made that would improve the law. And if I could just briefly go through them, if you have any questions at any time, please stop me. What this bill does, among other things, is, Mr. Esso's quite right, one of the things it does is take what are currently now subsections A3 and A4 of the Sexual Assault 1, which are the two sections of that statute which deal with child sexual abuse. It takes them out of there and places them into basically a new classification, a new title of crime, which is called sexual assault in the second degree, classes them both as A felonies. What they are, both of those right now, unclassified felonies. They were made that way last legislative session. Let me say right up front that that bill that was passed last session that dealt with several things in the criminal law, including that sexual assault, I thought was the main revision which has taken place in this code since the whole thing was passed back in 79. And the Department of Law was behind it, strongly supported some of the provisions, and we think it was a good bill. It addressed a lot of things that really needed to be done. One of the things that happened in that bill, and of course it was a very long bill and some portions of it were drawn up quickly at the end, as all legislation is raised the child offenses along with the forcible rape offenses into an unclassified. And of course unclassified is the most serious you can get, includes rape includes murder and kidnapping. Also what that bill did last time is make it a presumptive 8 for a first offense first offense sexual assault, and included the other penalties, increased them to like 30 years, for example, rather than 20. What this bill is attempting to do throughout is to take child offenses from the various parts of the code where they're found, and they're found in 6 or 7 different statutes scattered throughout, draw them together in an area that deals with child abuse legislation, and then attempts to make some kind of a grading as to seriousness. The sexual assault in the second degree, as class in the first degree, which is in section 3 of your bill, as a felonies, will carry on the first offense a presumptive 5. Will carry on the second offense a 10, on the third offense 15, maximum is 20 years in prison. The only section of this entire bill is, which does not deal strictly and exactly with child offenses, is section 2. And as Mr. Esso pointed out, that deals with sexual assault in the second degree. It would also cover children, but it doesn't deal specifically with children. And if there's a feeling on the part of this committee that this bill should only address child legislation, which I would understand, then I think that goal can be achieved by merely taking out section 2. That's the only section in the entire bill that doesn't deal specifically with child sexual abuse. What it does is make it easier to prosecute for sexual contact. Right now I have to prove sexual contact through threats. This would allow me to prove sexual contact through basically force, that is just doing it, reaching out and touching. There's a hole in the current law which this would try to address. It also raises a sexual penetration with a person suffering from a mental disease or a defect from a, currently a C to a B. It merges sexual assault in the third degree currently up to second and makes second degree stronger. There is currently a second degree, but it's real weak. The rest is divides sexual abuse of a minor into 3 categories, first, second, and third degree. First we already talked about, that's the current sexual assault one. Sexual abuse of a minor in the second degree raises up the current sexual abuse of a minor 1 penalty to a B. This is what Mr. Kessinger's bill would do. This also creates a new classification of crime which does not exist under the current code, and which is a problem. It's a problem when you go to prosecute someone and you don't have anything to prosecute them on. That's the one that I mentioned before where the father was touching his daughter improperly. Right now that's either a C felony, a B felony, or an A misdemeanor, or B misdemeanor, depending on her age. This makes that kind of behavior, up until the child is 18, a B felony. If it's penetration with your daughter, for example, that's first degree, that's an A felony under this plan. If it's contact, that is a B felony under this, and that's a new provision of the law. It doesn't exist in the current law. Sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree is basically what is now contributing. It's an A misdemeanor. It raises up to sexual abuse of a minor in the third degree, makes it a C felony. So you now have 3 categories of abuse, which now under current law you only have 1, and this, the 3 categories, takes in more conduct. One of the things that I found when I was prosecuting child abuse cases is that these child molesters would often work up to things in stages. And, for example, they might have a child touch them, touch their genitals, or they might touch the child. Sometimes they would just expose themselves to the child. And this was like the early steps of moving on to more serious conduct. Well, sometimes, thank heavens, you catch the person early enough, the child would be with it enough to tell a teacher or something. And what you have is a person basically committing indecent exposure to a child. I know, based on my experience, that this often leads to more serious. And if I have other charges against that same person, which is not uncommon, I can tell you what he was leading up to, because with child B and C, he got all the way. But with child A, the child ran away or we happened to catch him. That right now is an offense entitled disorderly conduct. It's a B misdemeanor. The most a person can get is 90 days in jail. When I go to some of these parents and say, well, I know that he was trying to, lure her into the bushes, and I know what he was trying to do, but the most I can get him on is a 90-day misdemeanor. The parents are outraged. They say, listen, that's a more serious offense than that, and I agree with them. So we have created an indecent exposure offense, taking out that disorderly conduct provision, making it an A misdemeanor if you expose yourself to a child, and a B misdemeanor if you expose yourself to an adult. And that, basically, the B misdemeanor is the current law. All this is a change so that if you're directing your conduct at a child, it's seen as more serious. I take that back. Sections 2 and Section 8 are the only two that don't deal strictly with children. I see that we've changed the definition that has to do with Section 2. We've taken out...
Wait a minute.
I'm going through the bill again, I'm sorry, and I'm at Section 8, which is the third page, I think. It just occurs to me that Section 8 also is one that does not deal specifically with children. So if you're on only to deal with children, you could take Sections 2 and 8 out, and then that bill would deal only with children.
Can I ask on that point, Mr. Chairman?
Why does 8 not have to do with children?
Well, it does have to do with children, but it also would cover adults as well.
The definition of the term used in Section 2.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let me ask on that. When you talk about without consent in Section 2,
mm-hmm.
you're not talking about lack of consent because of age.
No. And in fact,
that's a
I took issue with what Mr. Esso said. There's no way in the world that I would think anybody under the age of 12 or 13 could, quote, consent to have intercourse or sexual contact with somebody. I have never said that. I don't think a child under that age can consent. The difference is between a forcible rape and a rape in which the child is merely the victim rather than, you know, have to be beaten to death in order to accomplish the goal. In family cases, you'll often get conduct which is an assault against the child. It's an abuse of the child. But it's not a forcible rape in the sense of kidnapping and taking on the hillside.
If I can just follow up to make clear, under sexual assault in the second degree, the so-called adult crime,
yes.
Give me an example of a circumstance where a minor would be prosecuted under that rather than the rest of this.
Where a minor would be prosecuted under it?
Well, a person that normally would be prosecuted under 3...
Ordinarily, if a minor was touching another minor, if the victim of the touch was a minor, that person, whether adult or a juvenile himself, would be prosecuted for sexual abuse or sexual assault of a minor. Okay. The main way that Section 2 would come into play, that is sexual assault in the second degree, would be an adult touching another adult. Then the victim doesn't come under the special provisions of child stuff.
Or you could have a minor raping an adult and have a prosecution under Section 2.
Well, if it was a rape in the sense of penetration, it would be sexual assault 1, which is forcible rape. Mm-hmm. This is for contact without, you know, like...
Or penetration.
With the person suffering. And then, see, that is now sexual assault 3rd. It's a C felony. That's currently in the law. And sexual assault 2 is currently in the law and talks about contact, but it doesn't use the language without consent. It doesn't track first degree. It should. It was like an oversight. The change we're making without consent is that we're taking out the requirement of imminent death or imminent kidnapping, the view being that those threats are so serious in and of themselves, I'm going to kill you, that you shouldn't have to prove that you're going to do it in half an hour or 2 days from now or whatever. I'm going to take the contract out. It still would have to be imminent physical injury. I'm going to hit you now or pack a slap. You can't say, well, I'm going to hit you 2 weeks from now if you don't do this. That's not imminent enough. And the final thing we do in Section 10, again, this is an area where there's a hole in the current law that we're trying to address. Right now, a child can be assaulted. The child doesn't tell anybody or else tells the mother and the mother doesn't report it. Well, when the child reaches sufficient age and maturity to understand the seriousness, or maybe it's an ongoing assault and the child finally gets sick of it and tells a girlfriend, gets desperate enough, we want to be able to reach all of the conduct that's reported, even if it goes back beyond the 5-year statute of limitations. Right now, the statute of limitations is 5 years, and it applies even if the child never told anybody. Even if no, the cops never knew about it, social workers never knew about it, the time is still running. And that has caused problems in some cases where the child gets, say, 12 or 13 and then finally reports it the first time. So this extension would fit in right with the general time limitations. There are other cases in which time's extended, for example, this fraud that wasn't discovered until several years later. It's not unheard of to extend it, it's just that right now the extensions don't apply to child abuse cases, and in our opinion, they ought to. I think that Representative Kessinger's bill is a good idea. With all respect to him and Mr. Esso, who I've worked with for a while on this bill, I don't think his bill does very much. Right now, we are prosecuting the people for sexual abuse of a minor. All he does is, in effect, raises the penalty of it. I think that it's more important if this committee is going to, in good faith, address the merits of this area, which there's a real serious problem in right now, that your goal ought to be plugging the loopholes that exist in the current law, making it a little easier for the prosecutor to bring some of these people to justice when they are prosecuted. You know, what level you put them at, what you call them, that's up to you. But I do think that if this committee is concerned about the welfare of young children, which I know you are, that we ought to be able to be prosecuting some of the people that are right now slipping between our fingers. And now we have the expertise, we've been doing it for 2 or 3 years under the old system, we know where the loopholes are, hopefully we can plug them.
Yeah, what kind of a fiscal impact change does this have?
Since it has never been accepted as a committee substitute, we've never formally done a fiscal note on it. I know that there would be some fiscal impact. I would be irresponsible to tell you there wouldn't, because we would be prosecuting people that we are not now able to reach. I haven't got, since I wasn't sure what sections this committee would adopt, if any, it sort of depended on what version came out, what we wrote our fiscal note for, so that's why.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail, some of the portions of this bill as relates to your testimony, again, you have the advantage of having had the opportunity to study and work with it in depth, and I have not. But I think there are some very significant and far-reaching policy questions that should not be dealt with lightly according to your testimony. So I think for us to consider, in the short time remaining in this session, all of these policy questions that you raised, I think is next to impossible. Now that I've heard all of what you've said, because you're asking that we repeal the statutes of limitation. Those are very significant questions. Repealing as it relates to a minor, or allowing you to have more time.
Extending.
All of those are very significant questions, and I think that there are questions that you need to think long and hard about, because I really foresee some problems with some of the things that you're talking about. But again, I want to reserve judgment at the moment, but I would not support your bill with a section in it taking out the unclassified felony.
Virginia Miska?
Yes. Gail, on the section 7 you added here on indecent exposures, on a Class A misdemeanor for a child, against a child, do you feel that would be amply sufficient for an adult on exposure to a small child, a Class A misdemeanor?
Well, it's a heck of a lot better than what we have now.
What do we have now, then?
Which is a B misdemeanor, 90 days max. It's kind of a balancing act. And one, what kind of things do you get indecent exposure? Sometimes police officers arrest somebody for urinating in an alley and they'll arrest them for indecent exposure. Sometimes you get college kids and they're running down the street and they moon somebody. Now, that's obnoxious behavior. You get a certain amount of that in our society. I'm not so concerned about that as I am about people who are preying on children, and this is just the first step in a seduction or an assault. So you're weighing off. You don't want to treat mooning type behavior too serious. You don't want to make that a felony, really. But on the other hand, I don't want to take assaults on children too lightly either, and because I don't see them as lightly. And so I think that the A misdemeanor is kind of a good compromise between the two values. As I say, it's a fourfold increase over what we've got right now, which is just disorderly conduct.
Well, the reason why I brought the subject up, you know, we got an awful lot of this going on in Anchorage around the bike trails over there. I've been able to read about it over the years. It's getting worse and worse every year.
I know. Those are the cases I've prosecuted, isn't on bike trails. Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on in Anchorage, especially.
Representative Proxy?
I have several questions, but let me ask, go back to the fiscal note question. First of all, I know that you have not prepared a fiscal note, but the testimony from Representative Kestinger's aide was that one of the considerations for going with the shorter version is that that one would have less fiscal impact than yours. Let me ask as a general question what the impact fiscally would be. Compare those two bills for me. Would they have equal fiscal impact, one more than the other?
The Department of Laws would have a great deal more fiscal impact because this is not terrible because our bill does something. I mean, all his does is raise the time that somebody would spend in jail. So what you'll do is get a fiscal note from corrections saying it's so many more man years. You won't get a fiscal note from law on it because we're prosecuting those people right now. Okay.
So the yours difference would mean new court time, new prosecutor's time.
Yes.
So you'd actually get some more people.
Yes. And that's the intent of the legislation. There's definitely a cost. I wouldn't want to say you could get something for nothing. That's not. And if I could just mention, by way of follow-up to Representative Liska's questions, if there are some aspects, such as Representative Russell Barnes pointed out, that like extending the statute of limitations or something like that, that you feel there's not sufficient time to address, I think if there are some sections in the bill that you see there are currently strong overdue needs for, maybe you can take out the sections. You see, I understand very much what you're saying, and Mr. Chairman, what you're saying. It's kind of unfortunate because this information has been available to the legislature and has been discussed in other committees for quite some time, and it's unfortunate that it ended up not getting here a little sooner. I don't know much about why that was, but
we treated it the day we got it. Representative Wimpy?
I guess I'd just note there is a fiscal note attached to the Heston report.
Yeah, we have a fiscal note from the, again, it's, like she said, it's from the Department of Corrections.
Law has zero fiscal note on the original version.
In just comparing these bills, I've identified, let me just hit three differences that I see, and maybe I could get your explanation for why you go one way and the other bill goes the other, and then maybe Mr. appropriate, Mr. Chairman, get him to answer the same questions. One of the bills deals with victims 13 to 15, penetration if the victim is between the ages of 13 and 15. The other bill is 13 and 16, your bill. Question why that is. Second difference is the perpetrator would have to be 4 years older under the Kestinger substitute and 3 years older under your substitute. And the third difference that I can see in a quick review here is that the Kestinger bill does not seem to have a limitation of age for the perpetrator, and yours does. I'm not sure.
Vice versa.
Right, okay, right. Sorry. I wonder if you could just comment on those three differences.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. As I say, there was some work between the Department of Law and the other chairman in the other committee and Mr. Esso. Our original version of the bill had a 3-year time span between the victim and the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Esso felt that that was, in some cases, too short a time, that you would have teenagers engaging in boyfriend-girlfriend behavior and they'd end up being committing felonies. Of course, if the boy or the girl is 16 or older now, they're committing felonies now. But I mean, his concern was committing felonies. So in response to their suggestion...
A 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, for example, could potentially have a boy-girl relationship.
Right.
That was there.
Right. And basically as a result of their suggestion, we changed ours so it said 13 years of age or older and more than 3 years younger. So ours has a 4-year limitation, too. Although it didn't originally, in response to their suggestion, we changed it. So it could be changed back, too.
And more than
3 years younger.
Oh, I didn't
see. So it's got the same 4-year limitation. They may say theirs a little differently, but it's a 4-year limitation.
So they're both 4 years. No, theirs is more than 4 years. So theirs is 5 years.
No, theirs is 5 years then.
Difference is 5 and 4.
Okay. They do not change the current scheme where only 16 years of age or older are touchable under the offenses. You don't only have jurisdiction over the 16 or older. So the problem that we have right now with juvenile offenders getting off is not addressed by their bill. So this bill doesn't have a lower age limit, but theirs does because the current law does. It's not a change in current law.
Okay, if I can follow up on that. As I understand then what the problem is, if the perpetrator is over 16, the existing law you can get, if they're 15 now, there is no crime unique to their age group. Your alternative at that point is to waive them and charge them with the adult crime?
Well, I suppose we can't do it, but that would be the only alternative, that's right. And then you'd still have a question because the law still says 16 years of age or older does why. So even if you waive them into adult court, they're still not old enough to have committed the crime.
Even in the adult crime? Does it say that in the existing law?
If you're talking about children as the victims, yeah. No, please don't get me wrong, if it's a forcible rape, he's covered now. But if it's a child offense,
okay,
there's no
so
law that covers it.
Fills the gap with regard to the younger perpetrator and a child victim.
Right.
And there's
You wouldn't think that would come up a lot, but it does.
The third one then, Mr. Chairman, is the difference between the victim being 13 to 15 versus 13 to 16. Or did I read that?
Yeah, I don't. On ours, we try to keep it consistent. 13, 14, 15, or 16.
Yeah,
that's a change from current age, from current law, because now it only goes up to 15, so this would increase the coverage to 16.
And theirs leaves, if I may, Mr. Chairman, leaves the law the same, because it says 13, 14, or 15.
Yeah.
But they got to be 4 years younger.
Yes.
5 years younger.
Yeah, more than four.
More than four.
I know it's not simple, and that's why it's a little frustrating to get here so late in the season, as it were. I don't know why this bill had a double referral. I don't understand what happened when it got it either. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I understand that the committee's concerned.
Let me try to explore this to you.
Yes, sir.
If this committee was to take an action like this, for instance, what if we remove Section 2 and send it to finance? How long would it take you to get a fiscal note, please?
I'm sorry, Section 2?
What if we took Section 2 out of the Department of Law and bill, and this committee decided to forward it in that shape to finance, where the finance, where the financial education would be brought to it anyway? And since the sponsor is in finance, obviously most of the action to this bill video reaction to this bill probably will take place there anyway, both in the financial education and the fact that that's where the sponsor said. But if we, let's say we took out 2, 8, and 10.
We took out? Excuse me, I didn't understand the question.
Well,
take out
those
sections?
We took the Department of Law's draft, took out 2, 8, and 10.
I think we could get a fiscal note within a day, maybe 2 days. From law, I'm talking about from law.
Yes. Well, that's where the fiscal change, the big change.
Well,
there'd
probably be a corrections impact too, sir. I don't think there'd be anything besides corrections in law. Yeah, probably maybe court system, I don't know.
See, I'm not trying to be in a rush, I'm trying to be practical about this. If the Department of Law wants some form of change here, we really can't dilly-dally around here a great deal of time. And I'm trying to strike a middle ground here. And if I get the feel right from the table, if we took 2, 8, and 10 out, we may well be able to process some form of legislation. And I wouldn't be opposed to sending it to finance without a fiscal note, because that's where it is, without an adjusted one.
Mm-hmm.
That might be bending the rule a little bit, but I wouldn't think we'd be breaking it. Because I don't think there's anybody in this committee that doesn't recognize that there's an additional fiscal impact. What that is, we don't know. And,
I'm at the pleasure of the committee,
sir. Representative Liska, I'm here below.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask the chair why you would want to take Section 2 out, because that's what we're trying to do. You're going to gut the bill if you take it out.
No, you're not. That body of law already exists to cover that in an unclassified felony status. this section 2 reduces it from an unclassified to a Class A, basically, and that's kind of around about what happens.
Well, no, sir, excuse me. Section 2 deals with sexual assault in second degree.
Oh, okay.
Second degree.
I think perhaps, if I understand you, you're thinking about Section 3, which Section 3 takes the current sexual assault first degree sections and makes them sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree. So if you didn't include that one, that would leave them where they're at under sexual assault and would create a sexual abuse of a minor in the second and in the third. Or I guess you could rename it first and second.
Well, I guess I got my sections mixed up. If we took Section 3, 8, and 10 out instead of 2, did that when we went through with the discussion how we
could. If you're going to leave 2 in, probably should leave in 8, because the 2 are connected together. If you either both come out or you should both stay in.
So, Mr. Bottom?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, there might be some issues in the bill that the members of the committee think would require a lot of consideration, some that they don't. I don't know. Maybe we could go through this bill. It has quite a few sections, but there's a finite number, and I think I probably agree without having more information. I think I probably agree, for example, Representative Barnes about Section 10 of the bill, because I'm not sure what that would effect that would really have. I'd like to know more about it. I might be in favor of it, but I'm not. I'm suggesting a course of action, I guess, is to go through and see if there's sections that use this bill as a working draft, go through and see what sections we might want to take out or leave in one after another.
I think Gail pretty much did that. I kind of went through and made notes on the bill analysis as we went through. Representative Proxy?
Well, I'm just going to say, as I read the draft, sections 3 through 7 are sort of a system. Mm-hmm. That you've set up, a series of scaled or staggered sentences, and I guess I would encourage that the committee either take them all out or leave them all in, because if you start leaving one of them out, then you sort of cut into the staggered terms and all of that. So I think, isn't it 3 through 7?
Yeah.
All the way through indecent exposure, basically set up a very organized classification for every kind of circumstance where a minor is involved.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, on the Section 2 in the bill, sexual assault in second degree, if I understand the testimony of Mr. Retzke on this, that the way our current law is written for sexual assault in second degree, it makes it, she's stating, it makes it difficult, sometimes impossible to get prosecutions or convictions, because our law says that there has to be the threat of imminent death, imminent physical injury, or imminent kidnapping. And there's some arguments over what that means. And as I understand it, recommending that this might be a better approach as far as protecting people from these types of crimes, or at least incarcerating the perpetrators. And I'm not sure we should take that. I think we should amend Section 420 of current law after looking at it.
Is the word implied, is that in the present statute? Is this a copy of right out of the...
Imminent, sir, is in the present statute.
Expressed or implied?
Oh, yes, no, that's it. That's in there right now. See, let me give you an example. Maybe this would help. I had a case where it was a 16-year-old girl, and she's not covered as a child because she's too old, and her father was touching her breasts, molesting her. He had been physically abused in the past, and that he would kick and hit and strike her. He wasn't on these occasions. He just told her to go in the house and go in the bedroom and lay down and take the blouse off, which she did because she was afraid of him. I had the task of trying to prove to a jury of 12 in a felony case that this 16-year-old girl was under the express or implied threat of imminent death, imminent physical injury, or imminent kidnap. Obviously, the father is not going to kill her or kidnap her. But I had to try to show that she was under imminent physical injury because of beatings in the past. It was a real difficult situation. It ended up with the man pleading to a different offense. But facing the jury on those issues was difficult. If we had had sexual contact without consent, then I would have just charged her with that and just shown that she didn't consent, she didn't want to do it, and she told him no. And that would have been the end of it. Wouldn't have had to go into express kidnapping threats. And
Gail, when did you prosecute these cases?
Well, I just moved down here in August, so I was doing them for about a year and a half, only these kind of cases, ending in August of this year. Well, last year.
And you're saying that you, as a prosecutor, had problems with the new law that was passed last year in 535?
No, no. These statutes were passed back in 79. They were part of the new criminal code. They are aspects that were not addressed in your bill last year. In fact, this one...
Yes, but one section of this bill changes the law we passed last year.
Well, there are several sections that...
But not that one.
...change. If you're talking about the raising to the penalties, uh-huh. Yes, this does lower them back to two of them to where they were.
And how do you know, then, that they don't work? Because the bill didn't go into effect till October, and you couldn't possibly have had an opportunity to prosecute them.
I'm not addressing the sentencing portions in my remarks just now to the representative. I'm talking about sexual assault in the second degree, which is in the current law, and which was not changed by the bill last year, and which has a hole in it. I wish it had been changed in your bill last year, because then we wouldn't have to deal with it now. It was one of the things that initially was suggested to be included, and then it just... confusion, and because it was such a massive bill, it wasn't included. In fact, I went out and dug up the 82 file to get this proposed change. It was in one of the earlier drafts of the sexual assault stuff. And it's just one that got dropped out before the final bill last year.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to ask a question about this amendment to... Well, it actually looks like it's amendment to existing section 420 and 430 because 430's changed, but talking about the amendment to section 420, sexual assault in second degree, over in page, pages aren't numbered, but the last page of the draft where he got to the subsection 3 without consent on lines 3 through 8, question to Mr. Retzky. Says without consent means, and then it says, or by the express, I guess it means, or implied threat of imminent death, imminent physical injury. Now, the rewriting in section 420 and section 2 of this bill would take that imminent physical injury out of section 420, the way it's written in current law, but it seems like still left under the definition of without consent, which would apply in lines, lines 15 and 16 on page 1. In other words, what I'm saying is that the argument is that proving a threat of imminent physical injury is an unforeseen difficulty that occurred in our last Criminal Code 78 revisions. It looks like it would still be left in over in the last page of this draft through bringing it in through the definition. And am I reading this right or wrong, or did I misunderstand
you? You're reading it incorrectly, but okay. Nobody could blame you. Right now, it's first-degree sexual assault to have penetration with someone without consent, and that's the definition for without consent that you've just read. It has to be with or without resisting. It's coerced by the use of force or by express or implied threat. Okay, if that were the standard, without consent, that were applied to sexual contact, we'd be all right. We'd be home free. Unfortunately, in the current law, the definition of sexual assault, too, says sexual contact is coerced by the express or implied threat of death, physical injury, or kidnapping. It does not list force as one of the things that you can use to show without consent, you see?
Okay.
So what I need to do is get that force back in there as the right standard for penetration as well as for contact. Right now, it's not listed for contact, and I'm trying to make it apply to contact.
Thank you for the explanation.
I'd like to be more than willing to work with any member of the committee on any of this stuff. I would hate to see basically good suggestions if you agree to some or all of them go fall by the wayside because of the time. I know that time's a problem. I think with several people pulling together, you could probably pull something together fairly quickly.
Okay.
Well, Representative Fox.
Just before we leave this section two. First degree sexual assault also has a consent requirement. And the only difference between the two is contact versus penetration.
Right now, sexual contact, just contact, is not covered under sexual assault 1. It's covered under sexual assault 2, okay. But it now reads a person with contact with another person under express or implied threat of imminent kidnapping. It doesn't have without consent. Uh-huh. It should have without consent. It'd be a heck of a lot simpler. It doesn't have that.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd hate to face Ms. Oreski as a defense attorney. I think this convinced me on the merits of almost every section of the bill, regardless of work done last year or the complexity of it compared to the bill that's introduced.
Well, the committee's in some way of a quandary. We need to do something in the face of some time constraints. All of this talk about how quickly we can do something, we don't have those days. This thing obviously has a whole other committee to go through very soon. What we can do, I don't feel comfortable with the law about sending something to the finance and stuff. It embodies everything we want, short of the fiscal law. Unless we can philosophically agree over how to quickly rewrite this thing. This is a dead issue for this session. Representative Lowe?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to verify something. Under Section 10 of the bill, extending this period of limitation, under current law, that's generally 5 years. It would be 5 years.
Under current law, it's 5 years for everything, unless there's an extension. And there are extensions for fraud.
Okay, thank you.
This, if I may just elaborate, sir, this would only kick into play if the time has already expired. Like if it happened when she was 10 and she reported it when she was 12, you still have 3 years left because that's the regular one that applies. The only time this would even kick in, it's somewhat of an exception, is if the time has already expired. And then you have 1 year from the date of her report or the day she turns 16, whichever is first. If it's expired, if it's not expired, you come under its regular limits, which are obvious.
I frankly see little, if any, problem with the whole law draft. I would like to let Representative Kessler comment and go through it before we hear anything.
He's seen this bill, sir. I mean, he knows everything that's in it. I'm sure his aide can bear me on it. This is not a change from what was presented to him.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would like you to hold the bill until at least tomorrow.
We don't have any choice. We've got to sit down with the sponsor. We're going to need to continue. I don't have any problem dealing with it in the first order of business on the board's calendar. But unless the sponsor's here, I really don't feel very comfortable with it.
It's just two technical things with the law bill, and I assume that was drafted by law rather than by the bill drafters. Normally, a sexual limit is a repealer. I think normally those come at the end.
Yes.
Secondly, there's some use of the term "he" and "his" that should be deleted when it's normally drafted by other people.
What else did you notice in it?
He and his.
We got the Representative Lowe's questions all answered with regard to consistency of that. I didn't catch what you were saying until the very end of it. It was hard for me to track it to see if it involved. And when I first read it, I thought I saw it once more here, but I can't find it for the life of me right now. So maybe if we go to it slower, I'll be able to find it. But I thought I saw it again, but we can put some pressure on the bill drafting people and try to get this back and better bill drafting people and take it as the first order of business tomorrow. We we've got another bill that we have scheduled today, is HB6, which also hasn't arrived within sufficient time enough for us to deal with it. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before everybody takes off out of the room, there's a young lady in the room that would give me a great pleasure to introduce to this committee. First 2 years I was in the legislature when I served on the Judiciary Committee. She was an aide to the committee, and I've come to know her over the years, and I consider her my friend, although she works for a good Democrat. Her name is Rocky Potty. Rocky.
She's not nervous about this at all.
That does trigger an interest. Are you planning on testifying at any point?
No, I'm just here observing.
Okay.
We'll continue HB 17 to really substitute to whatever form we decide to adopt on the first order of business tomorrow. The committee will work with the bill drafting people to try to straighten that out. We will attempt to deal with that tomorrow. If we can get a fiscal notified, if we can't, we'll try to get some ruling which allows us to do it. The other bill that we had to deal with is HB 6. The committee, as you know, promised to draft to this for some time, and we received the draft again. It's just a matter of half three quarters of an hour prior to the start of this meeting today. We have only the one draft. We'll make copies of the thing and make sure that gets distributed. It's on the pages 14, 16 pages long. It's a lengthy draft.
Don't you think we should consider some hearings on that bill?
Well, yeah, there's only been about 7,000 hours of hearings on that thing. But, we need to distribute it to everybody just as quickly as possible so that it can become some night reading. Tomorrow we do intend to deal with HB6, and HB17, and the rest of the calendar, even if we got to extend it to the night tomorrow night to try to deal with those things. So unless there's something else to come before the committee at this time, we'll stay adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow.